Good evening, Bible Institute students. I'm sorry it's taken so long to get to this lecture on Jeremiah. It's an important lecture. I've wanted to do it. I've had it on my to-do list for more than a week, and now I'm finally getting to it at 11 o'clock at night. You could say we're going to be jogging through Jeremiah because I'm going to move rapidly through the material that you find on page 49 and 50 as I go through the notes that have been provided on the book of Jeremiah. Let's start at the beginning of the book with its introduction and the material there. Jeremiah is a young man from a priestly family, and he lives during the reign of Josiah, approximately 625 BC. This is the southern kingdom of Judah. If you remember back when the kingdom split, Jeroboam took the north, Rehoboam took the south, and this is shortly before the Babylonians come and conquer Jerusalem. Jeremiah is often called the weeping prophet because of his concern for Judah, her indifference, and the hostility to his message, and then his lamentation. The book after Jeremiah, five chapters of Jeremiah crying over the city that has been destroyed. Like Isaiah before him, Jeremiah was destined to preach the Lord's message with little in the way of visible fruit from the people who listened to him. God was removing any excuse on their part for his judgment. And so the sinful people who lived in Jeremiah's day are getting ready to feel the sting of God's wrath, and God gives them a final chance through the prophet Jeremiah. Chapter 1 tells us that God called Jeremiah before his birth. In fact, one of the great verses on the sanctity of human life occurs in verse 5. In verse 4 of chapter 1, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I sanctified you. I ordained you a prophet to the nations." And so here we see that Jeremiah was chosen by God before his birth. It's a testimony to God's sovereignty and the way he orders human history. Jeremiah was selected from the womb to serve the Lord. And then the Lord used two visions that are described for us in chapter 1 to confirm that ministry to Jeremiah. One was a vision of an almond rod, and the other was a vision of a boiling pot. Both indicate the type of ministry that Jeremiah would have. The ministry of Jeremiah would contain some good news and some bad news, but the majority was going to be bad news. Judgment was coming soon, and the Lord would be with Jeremiah, but nearly everyone else would be against him. At times, Jeremiah would have doubts as to whether he really wanted to keep on doing the job that God had given to him. After the call of Jeremiah in the first chapter, Jeremiah preached a forceful message against the sinfulness, even the apostasy of the kingdom of Judah. At times, he uses very, very strong language to describe what the sinfulness was like in Judah. Listen to some of the things that he says. Chapter 2, verse 22, "Even lye soap cannot clean your stain." Verse 24, the same chapter, "You are like a donkey in heat when it comes to idols." So they were passionately, irrationally acting in love with the idols that they worship. Chapter 5, verse 1, Jeremiah says, and God says, "I cannot find one righteous man among the people of Judah." Chapter 8, verse 7, the animals know more than the people of Judah. Chapter 8, verse 12, "They had forgotten how to blush." Blushing is a natural reaction that we have to something that causes us embarrassment, or when we've done something and we know it's not the right thing to do. The people of Judah did not blush when they sinned. And then this verse, chapter 15, verse 1, God says that even if Moses and Samuel were to rise from the dead and they were to pray and to intercede on behalf of the kingdom of Judah, God said it wouldn't help. One of the methods that God used and Jeremiah communicated with the people was through object lessons. And so here are seven. I don't think the number seven here is intended to be of significance as the number of completion or the number of perfection. But I do find that these are very interesting object lessons that Jeremiah used to communicate to the Judeans. When the first one in chapter 13 is the hidden wasteland, and he goes and he buries this wasteland by the river Euphrates. When he does that, it becomes worthless. And God is saying something to the people of Judah through that. And chapter 18 talks about the potter and the clay. Doesn't the potter have the right to shape the clay in any vessel that he wants, and make it any way he wants? And here the people of God were forgetting their relationship to him and his role. The broken jar extends that metaphor of a potter and a clay and said, you know, if a jar is not able to be used for what it's intended, you break it. You don't have a use for it. Chapter 24 gives us the object lesson of good and bad figs. Hey, good figs are great, and people who enjoy figs, they enjoy them. But if a fig is not a nice fig, I believe the King James might say naughty, and it's a ruined piece of fruit. It's spoiled. It turns out that it doesn't have the taste that it's supposed to have. What do you do with bad figs? You toss them. They're garbage. And there were good and bad figs in among the nation of Judah. The yoke around the neck is a very interesting object lesson that God used within Jeremiah. Jeremiah is actually putting a wooden yoke, what you would use with oxen, in order to guide them and to keep them in line. And he's carrying it around his neck to show the servitude that was going to come when the Babylonians took over the land. And interestingly enough, there is somebody who gives Jeremiah grief through this. He's a prophet named Hananiah. And he says, oh, don't listen to Jeremiah. Jeremiah is a doom and gloom kind of guy. And God, I've got a message from God. This is chapter 28 of Jeremiah. He said, no, everything's going to be fine. Things are going to go well. And Jeremiah says, well, we'll see who the real prophet is. If you're the real prophet, then what you say will come to pass and there'll be peace. But if I'm the real prophet, you're going to die in the coming year. And wouldn't you know, within a few months, Hananiah was dead. So, very interesting and very poignant. Well, I'm sure the people took notice a couple of months after this when the false prophet died. God told Jeremiah to purchase a field, and he purchases this field that is basically worthless because of the war that's going on with Babylonia. You don't buy a piece of property when you think that the nation is going to be conquered. But God told Jeremiah to do it because he said, you're sending a signal, a message, that this land is going to have a future and the hope, Jeremiah. I am going to bring people back here one day. They're going to be restored to the land. And one day, this land won't be overrun by foreigners and be useless. It will be good again. And you will have a right to redemption on this, or your descendants or your heirs. And so that actually ushers in teaching on the new covenant. Then there's one other illustration that I find tremendously fascinating. It's where God uses a group of people. They're called Rechabites. And God tells Jeremiah to offer them wine. Now, they took like a Nazarene vow, a Nazarite vow. They would not drink wine because their forefather had forbidden them to do it. He said, you don't do certain things. And one of them was you don't even drink grape juice. Okay? You avoid the fruit of the vine in order to be consecrated to God. And God said, here's this group of people. They follow this principle because their ancestor laid it down for them. And yet my people won't follow my law. What a strong condemnation. And what a great illustration as Jeremiah actually interacted with these people. Of course, his teaching got him into a lot of trouble. He was beaten. He was put in stocks. He was put in prison. You read the latter 30s chapters and you see this going on for poor Jeremiah. He's lowered into a dry well and he nearly died in the mud that was there at the bottom where there was muck and moisture. And he was threatened with a death sentence. He appears before King Jehoiakim, one of the last three kings of the southern kingdom. And when he gave him the word of the Lord, and the scribe is writing it down, the king tossed the scroll into the fire. Baruch, who is Jeremiah's secretary, had to recopy the book. Very interesting part of the story of Jeremiah and the book of Jeremiah. In addition to prophesying judgment for Judah, Jeremiah also foretold the coming judgment on some of the neighboring Gentile nations. And so in the later chapters of Jeremiah, you'll see the Babylonians' destruction is foretold, and other like Edom and other neighboring countries. Jeremiah tells us about how the events move along toward the final destruction of Jerusalem and the captivity of the people. And when that came about in 586, the fall of Jerusalem, Jeremiah was still in Jerusalem. It was only later on, approximately 580 BC, that Jeremiah was forcibly taken to Egypt by some of the Jewish people who fled Jerusalem after the assassination of the governor who had been appointed by the Babylonians. So there you have it. Jeremiah gives us a dismal message of the judgment and destruction of the city of Jerusalem. But there's good news too in the book, and you would not want to read this book without noticing that in chapter 31 through 33, God talks about a new covenant that he was going to make with his people. And in that new covenant, there's the message of restoration. That at the future time, Israel will once again be God's people. And they will follow his ordinances. And then they will have God's law written on their hearts instead of simply on stone tablets. Now, the Jews returned to the land after the captivity. But this prophecy regarding the new covenant hasn't been completely fulfilled yet. And so one of the things we look for to happen in the Bible prophetic timeline is for there to be a future day with a monumental return of Jewish people to belief in the true Messiah, the Lord Jesus. I'll ask you to turn over to page 51 for the notes on the Book of Lamentations. I'm going to move quickly through this. This is a sad account written by Jeremiah of the destruction of Jerusalem. That happened in 586 BC. Lamentations is an acrostic poem. If you remember the books of poetry, an acrostic poem has each verse or succeeding verses beginning with the next letter of the alphabet. And so we have an acrostic poem in the first four chapters. In fact, chapter 3, you have three verses in a row with the first letter, then three verses in a row with the second letter of the Hebrew alphabet, etc. And the beat, or the rhythm, if it were, of the book seems to resemble that of a Jewish funeral dirge. Lamentations is insightful because it describes some of the things surrounding the fall of Jerusalem. And this song is what gives Jeremiah his reputation as the weeping prophet. But there is a bright spot in the book, and so I'd like to read that as we close out this lecture on Jeremiah and Lamentations. It's found in Lamentations chapter 3, probably the most famous book verses in the book of Lamentations. Lamentations chapter 3. And I'll start at verse 19. Jeremiah writes, "Remember my affliction and roaming, the wormwood and the gall." These are things that are bitter substances, and they describe how he feels. "My soul still remembers and sinks within me. This I recall to my mind, therefore I have hope." By the way, tonight I'm reading from the New King James Version. Verse 22. "Through the Lord's mercies we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore I have hope to him." And verse 25, "The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul who seeks him. It is good that one should hope and wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. It is good for the man, for a man to bear the yoke in his youth." And so they're in the middle of great sadness and the destruction of the city. Jeremiah realizes that his hope is in the Lord. The Lord is faithful. The Lord is merciful, or the word loving kindness is another translation for the word mercy. But if we need to look, even in bleak circumstances, dismal circumstances, never forget that we rely upon the Lord.